take them down to raise another win. It's All right. Yes, this is The Long Road to Ruin. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And joining me tonight to talk the Porky's trilogy, it's Jason Teasley, the wrestling to the W2, the Max Chairman himself. How do you do, sir?
Doing good, Mark. Doing good. Glad to be a part of this. I know this has been on your docket for a while for us to review, so happy to be here.
You're the guy I pick for to do. You do the dirty jobs here on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network. You are the guy I tag to do all the things that Robert won't do. Just like, you know, nope, not doing it. You and I like to talk the fun movies, the really fun movies.
Yeah, we have a niche. definitely, me and you do have our niche. Movies we like to review. If anybody goes back to the archives and looks up some of our previous reviews, they definitely say that we have a type.
Yes. I believe, you know, Robert and I have sort of compared ourselves, maybe me to him. You know, I compare him to the guy who likes, you know, only the freshest fruit from the finest tree. And once that fruit is picked, even though there's still fruit left, perfectly good fruit, he'll tell you there's nothing there. It's all garbage. Meanwhile, he has compared me to a raccoon rooting through the garbage.
Well, that would make me a hobo, like helping you find the garbage.
Just laying amongst the trash.
Yeah. Because I mean, some of the movies me and you've covered together. Yeah. They actually have, like, I think one of the highest movies me and you've reviewed has been a 5 out of 10 on Rotten Tomatoes or something.
High art indeed. So you are around the same age as me. These Porky's movies, they started off with the first Porky's, obviously, in 1981, which would have made me about 5 years old.
I was three.
Okay. I know I saw Porky's when I was a little kid, probably not five, but darn close. And I know I saw the other, and I know I, well, here's the thing. So growing up as a kid, I was allowed to watch rated R movies. My dad didn't care if I saw boobies. Boobies, Jonas. Yay. That's right.
There you go. Yay, Jonas.
So yeah, he didn't care. I mean, I wasn't allowed to watch, you know, X-rated fare, but obviously. But my father did not care what I watched, and my mom didn't really have an opinion on it either. It was kind of, as long as we don't have to watch it, we don't care what you do. And I guess I was a horny little boy because I used to watch a lot of, like, the 80s hard body movies in elementary school. So I'm sure I saw the Porky's movie on the shelf at the mom and pop video store on Long Island where I lived. And I just remember thinking back then how much fun it was and how stupid and goofy it was. And I remember the shower scene. I haven't seen it probably since then. And when you and I were talking about, like, what kind of things can we do together, I'm like, this is not the kind of movie I can talk about with my usual partner in crime on here. This is only the kind of movie I can talk about with Jason Teasley. When did you first see Porky's? Do you remember?
Actually, the first Porky's I didn't see until I was almost in high school. Mm-hmm. Now, Porky's 2 I seen when I was probably elementary school. And I don't know what makes it stick out. The Porky's 2, the zombie part in the graveyard, the Pinochle song. I remember that from, like, when I was in grade school. But the actual Porky's, I think I was maybe in 9th, 10th grade before I actually seen the first one. And it was just one of those things that, you know, just happened to be on TV.
Yeah, we had HBO when I was a kid. I was a rich kid. I had the HBO and an Atari. Anyway, I'm sure I caught both. At the very least, I caught Porky's the next day, Porky's 2 on HBO. I probably saw Porky's Revenge too. But I'll tell you, watching them back this past weekend with my wife, by the way, just as an aside, I can't get my wife to watch shit that I do for these shows. She volunteered to binge the Porky's trilogy with me. She was like, yeah, I'm in. She was really excited. It's like Downton Abbey, Porky's, my wife.
Oh, well, funny thing is, this is the first time prepping for this was the first time I've seen the last of the trilogy. The first two, my wife actually was all in to watch with me as well. And which is really weird because she doesn't partake in very many movies with me. Mm-hmm.
All right.
And when I was like, yeah, I've got, you know, me and Mark's doing Porky. She's like, I haven't watched those in a while. She's like, I'll watch them with you. And I was like, all right. And then like the only reason why she didn't watch the third one is because she's actually in Florida right now. And I'm living the bachelor lifestyle till Father's Day. So that's why she did get to, she did. Dude, I've ate so much takeout because I've realized that I forgot how to like fend for myself since being married. So,
yeah, I get that. All right, so let's jump into these wonderful pieces of art, the Porky's trilogy. We'll start with the plot synopsis here of the first Porky's. Here we go. So. Porky's was a teen sex comedy from 1981, and the plot goes like this. 1954, each boy in a group of Florida high school students plans to lose his virginity. They go to Porky's, a strip club in the Everglades, believing that they can hire a prostitute to satisfy their sexual desires. The club's proprietor, Porky, takes their money but humiliates the boys by dumping them into a swamp like you do. When the group demands their money back, the sheriff, Porky's brother, drives them away, but not before he extorts them for the rest of their money, further embarrassing them. After Mickey, who returned to Porky's for revenge, is beaten so badly he has to be hospitalized, the gang becomes hell-bent on exacting revenge on Porky and his brother, eventually sinking Porky's establishment into the swamp. Porky and his men, joined by the sheriff, chase the group, but the boys make it across the county line. Out of Porky's brother's jurisdiction, where local police officers and the high school band meet them. One of the officers, Mickey's older brother, Ted, repeatedly damages Porky Hudson's Hornet, promising to drop all the charges against Porky for driving an unsafe vehicle if the night's events are forgiven. Because the boys are too young to have been allowed into Porky's legally, Porky and his brother agree. In a subplot, because this is just laden with plots, the boys peep on co-ed students in the girls' locker room shower, and Tommy, Billy, and Pee-wee see several girls showering. It's like the most famous scene in the movie. Pee-wee gives them away when he shouts at a heavier girl who has been blocking his view to move so that he can see. While a few girls run out, most stay, finding the situation funny. To test their attitude, Tommy sticks his tongue out through the peephole, but it gets smeared with soap. Ugh. Infuriated, he drops his pants and sticks his penis through the opening like you do. Just before female coach Beulah Ballbricker, who has a running feud with Tommy, walks into the shower area. Spotting the protruding member, she sneaks up on Tommy, grabs his penis, and pulls with all her might. Tommy pulls free and escapes, but Beulah is determined to prove that the offending member, which has a mole on it, belongs to Tommy, going so far as to request the principal hold a police-type lineup of the boys in the nude so she can identify it. However, Carter balks at her request. As the other basketball coach laughs, Coach Brackett suggests asking the police to send a sketch artist and hang wanted posters around the school. When the suggestion gets even Carter laughing, Ballbricker leaves in a huff. At the end of the film, she sneaks out of the bushes to ambush Tommy and actually drags his pants down, but she is pulled off of him by police and dragged away screaming she saw it and she can identify its owner. Tommy breaks the fourth wall saying geez to the camera. In another subplot involves Coach Brackett taking an interest in the attractive Coach Honeywell, who is played by Kim Cattrall. Coach Warren repeatedly refers to Honeywell as Lassie, pointing to the equipment room, much to Coach Brackett's confusion. He quickly finds out why he and Honeywell hide out in the equipment room after an argument with Ballbricker, and Honeywell becomes turned on by the smell. This leads to the pair having sex in the room, but Honeywell begins loudly howling like a dog, thus revealing why she is called Lassie. Her howls are heard through the entire school, much to the students and Coach Warren's amusement. Brackett and Honeywell are fired as a result. Oh.
I mean,
Jason, what, this movie?
What, six plots? We had six plots running through there.
It's like more laden than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and what's funny about all these movies is the fact that it's called Porky's, and you got maybe 20-30 minutes out of the entire movie
that deal deals with Porky's.
Yeah, yeah. I think he has screen time of maybe a total of 10 minutes. And Porky's 2 the next day, he's absent through the entire film.
Right.
And then the third one is just, these are fun movies. I mean, an interesting thing about this is how Porky's 2 got made is because that if the, I think it was the director, agreed to do Porky's 2, they would make one of his pet projects, which end up being The Christmas Story.
Really?
So, yes.
That's actually on the agenda for this year during Christmas time.
Yes. It was, let me find it here. I've got it. I actually done notes. Surprisingly.
Oh, you did research for this. Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than what I do for the kickoff. I just show up. Yeah, writer-director Bob Clark gathered material. No, okay. The highest grossing. Oh, this was also the highest grossing movie in Canada for 24 years.
Oh, Canada.
It was unseated in 2006. And then the highest movie currently is Resident Evil Afterlife.
What?
According to the 80s Rewind website, the studio did not want to make A Christmas Story, but allowed it. So Bob Clark would do the sequel to Porky's 2, Porky's 2 the next day. So without Porky's 2, there would be no Christmas Story.
Okay. So we were talking, this movie engendered, weirdly enough, this movie engendered a conversation that took place online in our network chat. And my wife and I, and it started with my wife and I just kind of discussing how, like, I can't imagine there being another big start to, like, the teen sex romp movie. Like, I feel like it starts with this one. There may have been others, but I think this one is the most, like, highly identified as the beginning of that sort of cultural phenomenon, the teen sex romp. It starts to die off, and then it gets revived again with American Pie, and I think we determined that the early 2010s, it kind of died. You get the occasional one now. I think the last one that I cited was Good Boys, but it was nothing like this.
Oh no. I mean, this epitomizes everything 80s. And I mean, like you said, we grew up in that era. We can relate to it. And you know, this was, what American Pie was to that generation is what Porky's was to our generation. Sure. And it's just like, it's that coming of age sex romp comedy that just you have to have no real functioning brain cells to enjoy. It's just something that obviously with six plots, you know, very thinly woven together. And it's just something to enjoy.
Yeah, it's just so funny because, like, really the whole thing is it's just boys wanting to get laid. And some girls wanting to get laid. And it's just like, will they or won't they get laid? That's the plot.
Yeah.
But the only thing that lends any kind of like depth to this movie is the one kid who keeps going back to the strip club and gets the shit beat out of him. And then it kind of turns into a revenge plot. You know, it's like Porky humiliated them the first time. And then it was like most of the guys were just willing to just let it go. Like, oh, well, sucks to be us. We're wet now. Shucks, you know, and then they just kind of get over it. But the one kid, it was Tommy in the plot synopsis, like just keeps going back to the bar and he keeps getting the shit beat out of him. And finally, he gets the shit beat out of him so badly, his friends are like, that's it. That's all we can stand, and we can't stand no more. And they, they launch this big plot to get Porky back, and Porky just kind of, well, I'm on the wrong side of the fence now. I guess I'm done. You got me, kids. Put the cuffs on.
Shuts.
Yeah. Darn. And but, that's it. That's kind of the whole movie.
Well, and it doesn't really explain, and what's funny is about it, it doesn't really explain why he keeps going back. It's like, okay, you go back once, you get the hell beat out of you. I'm sorry, why keep going back? But
yeah, it's not like they don't flesh that out. Yeah, he just does. It's one of those weird things where it's like they're so busy dealing with everything else in the movie, they don't really take time to explain why Tommy won't accept it. I am right. That is the character's name, right? Tommy.
Yeah, I think it's Tommy that gets.
It's Mickey. I keep saying Tommy. It's Mickey. Yeah. Mickey is the, Mickey who returned to Porky's for revenge. Okay. So sorry, everyone, Mickey who keeps going back to Porky's, and they don't really explain like what's motivating him, you know, like beyond the humiliation of it all. It's just, he just does, you know, he won't accept it. And it because he won't accept it, his friends take up for him, and that's what leads to the resolution of the whole thing. But yeah, all these characters, you know, from Pee-wee on down are pretty, I wouldn't call them flat, but they are definitely like not, it's literally like Horny Boy 1, Horny Boy 2, Horny Boy 3. And oh, yeah, like levels of horniness.
Yeah, definite stereotype in there. I mean, this is a question I'm going to ask you. I'm just curious, who's your favorite character out of all of them?
You know, I'm going to pick the easy answer. At least in the first one, it's got to be Dan Monahan, who plays Pee-wee. I think Porky's kind of like a fun character because, like, you know, he has that, like, boss hog kind of look to him. But I remember, like, his first dialogue reading, and I was like, I did not expect him to sound that way. Because, you know, he's a big old fat guy. He's got the big cowboy hat on, the big 10-gallon hat. You know, he's got the vest on and everything. And I'm really expecting, like a deep Southern accent. And it's like, no, he's just kind of, hey, y'all don't belong in my bar. That's it. That's as far as it goes.
That's it.
You know,
what do you want?
Yeah, and they don't make him especially dumb. They don't make him hickish. You know, he's just big old fat guy running a bar. You know, and he's being menaced by these teenagers that didn't belong there in the first place. You almost like take up the Porky side. They didn't belong there.
Understand.
Yeah, like he's just trying to run a bar, and these, you know, kids are harassing him.
Who got in illegally, and right. that he's just trying to teach a lesson. Don't break the law. And now his brother's a douche, but Porky is real. I mean, you can see it's justifiable why he would treat these kids that way. But yet he's supposed to be the antagonist, and you're like, well, he's got a point.
The structure in terms of film craft, the structure of Porky's is very episodic. It begins at school. And it's just like you're getting to know your scene of all the characters is just them talking about sleeping with a prostitute potentially. And Pee-wee, you know, you get to know Pee-wee by his desire, his like a begging, like, oh, include me. I want to bang the prostitute too. And then there's the bit with the egg. You know, he's the guy's doing the bit where he's juggling the egg and he's like, make sure he drops one. And it's a, you know, and it's just a regular egg and the yolk, you know, the egg cracks and the yolk comes out. And then the victim thinks he's going to get hit with another one of those. And it's a hard boiled egg and it's, I got you. Except that they screw with Pee-wee all through the movie starting here. And he does it to, who is it?
Meat.
Right. I'm within Mongo. Different movie. hey, you know what movie that is? Speaking of beating dead horses. I'm so happy to have my sounds back.
I love it.
Anyway, the people listening on podcast going, what just happened? I have a clip of Mong for I've forever had a clip of a horse sound for, you know, the beating a dead horse thing. I can now, because this is a partially a visual medium, have Mongo punching the horse from Blazing Saddles. These are important.
One of my One of my favorite all-time Mel Brooks movies. I don't care what Ronnie Adams says.
These things are important to me. Anyway, speaking of beating dead horses. Yeah, so he does the bit with the egg, and of course he hits meat, and you know, and he gets, you know, fooled into hitting meat with a non-hard-boiled egg, and of course meat chases after him. That's actually a great dialogue reading, because meat's like, "You're dead," and Pee Wee's like, "I know," and runs for it. It's great. But yeah, like the whole first bit of the movie is take me to the prostitute. Okay, we'll take you to the prostitute. Here's the prostitute. And they all line up naked, and of course it's a big gag. You know, she's in on it. A little racially insensitive. They get a large black man to kick open the door. That they paid $10, yeah, in 1950. This is like, I think this takes place in like the 50s?
Yeah, which would be $96.20 in today's standards.
There you go. So yeah, large black man with a machete like runs into the house after killing the prostitute, quote unquote, and chases the naked boys into the woods, one of which runs afoul of like the local police. So there's that. Then they're like, okay, well, that didn't work out. So we'll go to Porky's, and that's where, you know, the action really takes off. But the second thing that the plot synopsis addressed that we should talk about is the most famous scene in the entire movie, the shower scene.
Yes. A staple of 80s filmography.
Yeah, like whenever like they show clips of famous movies from the 80s, the only clip they ever show from Porky's is the girls bending over in the shower looking through the hole. You know what they don't show? The teacher sexually assaulting the student.
Yeah, it has a bowl on it. That's the funniest exchange ever. I really think that they didn't have any dialogue for that scene in the principal's office where she's, because I was laughing just as hard as they were in the background, and I was cackling because I really think they just set the camera up and said, okay, this is the outline of the scene, and go. It just recorded natural reactions because that is hilarious.
So, like I said, everything is very episodic, and some of the stuff intertwines. And so basically, like, the secondary plot is they try, you know, them just trying to see naked girls in the shower. I think the one time they miss it, I don't remember if there was a second time, but this last time, the everything built to this one thing. They go to catch the girls in the shower, and the setup is there's a rather larger girl standing in Pee-wee's in the way of Pee-wee's hole that he's looking through the wall. And of course, he, you know, being a moron and being fed up with the whole thing, he yells at her, and she's like, "Whoa?" You know, and so, like we said, like the girls run out of the, some of the girls run out of the shower, some of them stay. And this all leads to, what's the character's name? Then it was Billy. Yeah.
Horny guy too.
Horny guy too, yeah. This all leads to him sticking his, you know, first the tongue, as we said, and then his dick. And then and Paul Pricker grabs him. And I'm like, and I'm just looking at, I'm watching this, and I'm looking at my wife, and I'm watching this, and I'm looking at my wife, and I'm like, that teacher has sexually assaulted that student. I mean, in the world of this movie, he's a teenage boy, and she's a middle-aged woman, and she grabbed him by the dick and tried to pull him through the hole like a cartoon character.
Oh, well, we take it a step further in one of the later movies, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Because like the entire Porky, even though the Porky's trilogy was made over a period of several years, this entire trilogy takes place in a single school year. Like it ends with them graduating high school. Like, you know, Porky's 2 is the next day, as the title tells us, and Porky's 3 is not too long after that.
Yeah, I think Porky's 3 is actually maybe a year. I want to say a year or two after it, because when they come up to the where the bar used to be, they said it's been a couple of years since they've been there.
Okay. And then the timeline's got to be off a little bit because they're still in high school.
Yeah.
And Porky 3 takes place.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that they might have been like sophomore year in the first.
Well, some of them are also driving, but then again, it's Florida. They could be 13 for all I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, sophomore year, you're about 16 driving in sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the 50s, you know.
Yeah. So, anything else about that? Because if not, we'll talk about the Kim Cattrall thing. Kim Cattrall, who would go on to be in Sex and the City, what a career Kim Cattrall has had. Porky's, Mannequins, Sex and the City, with some stuff in between.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty nice filmography. I mean,
hey, we need a trampy, pretty girl. Call Kim Cattrall.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, but yeah, there's not really too much that we haven't already covered. I mean, it's
we got to talk about Kim Cattrall's big sex scene.
Yeah, I mean, that is so well played. It is because they build up to it, and the best part of it is not that scene itself. Mm-hmm. It's the coach's reaction downstairs when he goes behind the mat trying to hide and just starts busting out laughing. That's why I think that most of this movie was probably ad-libbed.
Probably. They just had like a book full of storyboards and, you know, and a loose idea of what it was going to be. And they're okay, you're horny boys. You want to go bang a prostitute. Go.
Yeah, I mean, because I think a lot of these are just reaction shots and they just like maybe pump the sounds through the gym and just the awkwardness. And there's like, yeah, you just have to react to this in the most hilarious way possible. And he just walks over, pulls the mat up and gets behind it. And just like he's hiding, like he's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And he just starts busting out laughing. And it's like, okay, I could see that. That would be a natural reaction.
I have to say, you know, I know, like, your thing is, the funny parts of the reaction. I don't know, man. Later on, Meg Ryan and When Harry Met Sally will do a very similar bit, you know, in the sense of, you know, an overacted, you know, horny sex growl. But I have to say, like, and I didn't remember this from watching it as a kid, but Kim Cattrall and the noises she makes, like, that is damn hilarious.
Oh, yeah. The howl.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Which is why she's called Lassie. So your final thoughts here as I kind of gear up for the next thing that we're doing on Porky's, the original Porky's. I mean, you said it before. We have said all there is to say about this. This is a let me say this, and then I'll give it to you to take us out. There didn't need to be any more of these. I mean, granted, this thing on a $4 to $5 million budget made $160 million in 1981 money. So clearly it was a huge success. And of course that, you know, it became a cultural icon, and the original deserves all of those things. It is an important part of the culture. I think the culture of movie making, it's an important part of, I think, American culture when it comes to sex, which is a storied tale in and of itself. And I think had they just left it at Porky's, it would have just been one of those kind of pristine film things that happened in the world. And we could sort of look at it with a degree of reverence, which is weird to say about a movie where, you know, about horny teens trying to get laid. I think they take away from its legacy by making the next two movies, which we're about to talk about. Because this thing, when we say like the long road to ruin, no, this was a whoop and down again. Like, there was no long road here.
Yeah, this was a long walk off a short pier. But I honestly, and I'm gonna say this, and I'm gonna catch hell over this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a coming of age story that I would put on par with Stand By Me in the fact that the staple of coming of age, like telling the story of coming of age, Stand By Me was a different coming of age and it dealt with a different aspect of coming to late age.
It sure did.
This dealt with the aspect of, you know, dealing with your hormones basically and being a, but it done it as if you, but if you think about it, this was a movie, a coming of age story about high school kids, how they actually act. I mean, in high school, I was thinking about getting laid 24/7.
Yeah, totally. No question there, especially talking to me, you know, hornball that I am. But but the other thing to consider is that it's about teens in the 50s. You got to remember, like, you know, I think these are the children of baby boomers. These are the children of the people who fought in World War II, the greatest generation. These are their kids. They are benefiting from the largesse of that era of Americanism, where Europe is rebuilding from the war, and America and the Soviet, you know, we're in the midst of the Cold War. America is probably at like the height of its financial and military power, you know, and you know, we're shifting from the agrarian and sort of industrial society to, you know, we're building suburbs, you know, in Long Island, the Levitt houses, Levittown. And so, like, you have the time as a young man to think about pussy all the time. You know, you're not thinking about the draft. You're not thinking about taking care of the farm necessarily, you know, or having to leave school to go work to take care of your family by working in a mine or a factory. Like, these are kids in the suburbs, in high school, and they're able to, you know, they're able to think about other things. And when you're a young, horny boy, when that space isn't being taken up by having to take care of your family, basically, what's going to filter in there? And it kind of, Porky speaks to that mentality, speaks to that psychology in a dumb fucking way. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it is commenting that, hey, this life post World War II was this, and tits and boobs and dicks and pranks. And did I mention before their revenge on Porky was to commit, like, you know, criminal mischief and destroy his bar, which I also thought was funny.
Yeah, and the how they done it was funny. But yeah, I mean, it's a movie that tells the coming of age story of high schoolers in that time period where, mm-hmm. like you said, you didn't have the responsibilities that the generation before nor the generation after would see. It is a very, very interesting take on it, because it is definitely a popcorn movie where, like I said, you don't have to have like some inept filmography knowledge and break a movie down to see what the director meant. This, he meant these boys want to get laid. That's it. They want to ruin this damn club because they're pranksters. That's it. There's no in-depth. It's surface level.
You know what might have helped them actually write a more in-depth movie, if you ask my opinion on the matter?
A bigger budget.
Close. Grammarly. Had they only had Grammarly back in the late 70s, early 80s when this film was in, did you just roll your eyes at me? And back in the late 70s, early 80s when this film was in development, they could have written a much more in-depth and fleshed out script for the teen sex romp that was Porky's. Because Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistakes for you on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M network. That's getgrammarly.com/W2M network to download Grammarly for free. All right, Porky's 2, The Next Day from 1983. The Angel Beach High School Drama Club is producing Shakespeare, a Shakespeare festival, in which the group from the first film is participating. A religious leader named Bubba Flavel wants to halt the production because his group, The Righteous Flock, gee, I wonder what they're parodying here, believes Shakespeare is indecent and profane. Flavel recruits the support of the Ku Klux Klan chapter by informing them that the festival will feature an interracial kiss between John Henry, a Seminole student playing Romeo, and a white Juliet played by Wendy. This, by the way, Wendy in this entire trilogy has my favorite line. I will not stand here and be accused of having a boner.
Yes.
That was the best.
Great.
The students seek the help of County Commissioner Gebhardt, who promises to pull some strings to keep the festival running. Gebhardt reneges on his promises after his aide delivers a stack of 500 petitions from the voters that Flavel gathered. Meanwhile, the Klan attacks and beats John Henry. The students perform a huge for a huge audience, and the Shakespeare Festival is a success. Though the Angel Beach principal supports his students, he is forced to cancel the festival after the county commissioners voted against it. The Angel Beach students plot revenge against Flavel, Commissioner Gebhardt, the rest of the county commissioners, and the Klan. The teens discover that the county commissioners, while publicly espousing decency and morality, secretly gather to watch stag films in the courthouse basement. The students take a tape recorder to the courthouse to record the commissioner's commentary on the films, which includes remarks that Flavel provided the pornography. After the festival is canceled, Wendy agrees to a date with Gebhardt at a classy restaurant. Wendy arrives in a deliberately showy, vulgar gown with her breasts artificially inflated by a secret container of fake vomit, which they painstakingly showed her making in a previous scene.
Yes.
Throughout dinner, she constantly shouts at Commissioner Gebhardt's name, his upcoming re-election, and her own age. Yes, by the way, this like middle-aged man dating a teenager who he intends to sleep with, by the way.
That's his niece.
Alerting other patrons to the situation. Once she has the attention of the entire restaurant, she announces that Gebhardt took her virginity and that she is now carrying his child. Finally, to complete Gebhardt's humiliation, she uses the fake vomit to pretend to throw up in a fountain. We have to talk painstakingly about that, by the way. We have to discuss that in great detail. When Gebhardt tries to sneak away, Pee-wee jumps out with a camera, promising to send the photos to the local newspapers. The students lure the Klansmen, who are on their way to Flavel's celebratory revival meeting, into the school gym, whose bleachers are filled to the capacity with Seminoles. The students hold down the Klansmen while their Jewish friend Brian shaves their heads with the Ishmael. The Angel Beach students and the Seminoles then strip the Klansmen naked and force them to run across the stage of Flavel's revival. In the confusion, the students commandeer the public address system and play the recording from the courthouse basement. The outraged crowd turns on Flavel, the county commissioners, and the Klan, and the closing montage of newspapers report Gebhardt resigns. Flavel is ousted from his position, the county commissioners face obscenity charges, and the festival resumes. Alrighty. So, this fucking movie.
So says the flock.
So says the flock. Yeah, I didn't love Porky's 2. It's not as bad as Porky's 3, but it ain't great.
I don't know. The principal has a great line in this when he says, "Get the flock out of here." And the principal, we have to talk about him because he plays such a he tries to play such a straight-laced, dim-witted person, but he has some of the best lines, and he deadpans a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like you could tell that his facial expressions make a lot of the scenes he's in, because you could tell he's holding back so much, mm-hmm. but he deadpans it. this was a movie.
this was definitely a talkie.
Yeah. The Ball Breaker totally has a whole different personality in this movie. They changed her character completely. So, from sexual assaulting a student to being a highly religious person who is against the filth of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But the scene I want to talk about is the dying scene in the graveyard.
Please, by all means.
The
you got to set it up there. You got to explain to people what happened.
Okay, so what happens was they're at a carnival or something. It is a belly dancer. So Pee-wee and them goes. Pee-wee gets the bright idea that he's going to play a prank on everyone else. So he goes to the person for the lady first and solicits her. Well, they come in behind him, offer more money. to turn it back on Pee Wee. So they think they all get together. They think they're going to go have a gangbang with this.
Yep. We seem to have lost Jason. All right. So there he is. We lost all you right, momentarily.
Yeah, I just vanished. Well, they go in and get this this belly dancer, and like, and they think Pee Wee thinks there. So, and they've got he's got somebody dressed up as a zombie who's drunk out of his mind, singing Pinochle, the Pinochle song, while he's laying in this fake grave. Well, they go tell Pee Wee to go get dressed. They'll be there. The belly dancer then proceeds to strip down and fake a heart attack. And
right.
How she fakes a heart attack is some of the most Oscar-worthy performance ever. Because it is the most over-the-top sell job I've seen since Shawn Michaels' Hulk Hogan.
I like that that's become the universal thing to compare or like overacting to on this network.
Yes. but it is hilariously painstakingly obvious that she's faking. And the fact that she just goes stiff and then just starts trying to boss and she's butt naked, which makes it funnier, and then all of a sudden you got the drunk guy that pops up out of the ground, and it's just, and they've convinced Pee Wee that he gave the lady a heart attack, and they got to take her, she's dead, as you can see her breathing. It was one of those things that it's like, really? This is what we've come to.
This is what we're doing now, eh?
But funny. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, I really think, you know, you said something about episodic things earlier. I really think you could probably just break the original Porky's down into a short sitcom, like, and you would have still got the same outcome.
Yeah,
Porky's two.
I was gonna say, not well, so actually, much. You could take all three. I was gonna say you could take all three movies and kind of make, you know, and break them down into, I think, 22-minute sitcoms with very little alteration to what actually happens. Because, like, I mean, this one was, in terms of narrative structure, more coherent, more cohesive, I should say. Like, they had a central problem with the evangelist, and that bled into the problem with the, you know, with Gebhardt. And but they separately, they resolved those issues. But you're right. Like, this could have very easily worked as a television show, and I think they've actually tried. I was reading that, like, Howard Stern actually, like, had the rights to this at one point or another, and he was trying to, like, make a revival of it.
Yeah,
and it never happened.
Yeah, could you imagine trying to make Porky's nowadays, though?
Again, you can't, like, think. The conversation that took place on our chat was, the teen sex romp, the sexy teen sex romp, got replaced by the stoner comedy, and I think that's a reflection of what became acceptable in, like, Twitter culture, essentially, and, like, common culture, where, you know, horny teen boys are out, but, you know, but who doesn't want to get high, right, Jesse Starcher? You know, Bongzilla.
All right, not touching that one.
I just think, like, we suddenly had this really weird switch in the culture to where, like, getting high on screen became more acceptable than, you know, horny, nearly assaultive teen boys, and, you know, and in some cases rightly so. And it's like, now you're walking on eggshells on how to handle this thing. And when the idea is to just be funny and make something that's entertaining for people, when it becomes more of a pain in the ass to try to get it out there than not, because you have to walk through this minefield of cultural acceptance, it almost isn't worth making the movie. It's not fun anymore. But I kind of miss it. I miss this sort of film. I mean, especially the first one.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that's the problem. People are too offended by movies that the quality of movies have greatly suffered because of the cultural appropriation of everybody's feelings. and you don't get.
Oh, we lost Jason again. Jason, you froze. All right. There you go. Now you're back.
It's one of those things that I really wish we could get more movies like this, mm-hmm. better quality movies.
Sure.
But on par with the comedy, the ability just to tune out and enjoy something for mm-hmm. the 90 minutes that you're watching it and not right. have to overnight analyze it and just escape reality, because I think that's a thing nowadays. And I'm not going to lie, personal side note here, I've been dealing with a lot of shit here lately since my mother passed away that I haven't really come to grips with. Watching these movies took me back to a point in my life that I was mentally okay, and it helped me get recenter stuff and helped me kind of take all the chaos in my life that I was dealing with and kind of deal with it by not having to think about something and just sit down and enjoy a movie. And it kind of brought me out of the funk I was in. So that's just a personal side note. And because these movies are just that, it's an escape from your current reality, put you in something that you don't have to overthink and you can actually just enjoy.
No, it wasn't like a derisive laugh or anything. It was more like, you know, how Porky's helped me get over the death of my mom. You need to like write that in a blog somewhere or an article or something. I think it's hilarious. I'm glad I could do that for you. I'm glad this podcast was sort of here to, you know, as friends and as just people who enjoy movies, like we could talk about something silly as Porky's and you feel just a little bit better. Just in the interest of time, let's close up our discussion of Porky's 2 by talking about that ridiculous dinner scene. Because Wendy, who becomes like my favorite character between Porky's 2 and Porky's 3 in this, like she definitely surpasses Pee-wee. Pee-wee gets annoying after a while. I have to say, first of all, this is also the one where her and Pee-wee are like dating for a little bit. And they actually have some like really cute on-stream chemistry. Like by the third one, they're not together anymore. And it's kind of a bummer. But I like the Wendy Pee-wee combination and their conversation about like why she kind of tolerates what she, you know, kind of the abuse from the boys, and she lets people think what, you know, what they do about her, and him like wanting to defend her honor and be chivalrous. Gosh, there's not a lot of like really relatable emotional human moments in any of these movies, but that was at least one. So good on the writers for providing at least that much emotional resonance for a teen sex romp stupid movie. You know what I mean?
And it goes back to the end of the first one, because her and Pee-wee loses his virginity to her at the end of the first movie.
No.
Yeah. And that's what starts that conversation. He said, "Well, why'd you do it?" And she was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "I actually like you." And then you get this really heartfelt interaction, and it kind of puts stuff in perspective of things. And like I said, in the middle of this raunchy mm-hmm. comedy, you actually have a moment of, because a lot of people can relate to that, because a lot of people do get that stigmatism and they can't shake it. And
right. Well, that's a big problem with teenage girls. You know, the first girl to grow boobs is a whore, and it never quite gets past that. You know, God forbid you should actually like a boy, you know, and you like a boy that another girl likes. And it's just, Henrietta's a whore.com, you know, it was something that my friend and I would talk about, like, you know, back when we grew up, you went to school, they called you a whore, and at least you went home and it was over. Now you go home and it's all over social media. You can't escape it. And that's why so many kids are like, you know, that deal with that. That's why, like, one, the pendulum has swung so far into like anti-bullying efforts because of the effect that this has on kids, but also because kids have now nowhere to go. You know, it's hard to escape social media. And social media is this place where the bullying never ends.
And you got to think about something else. And going back to like this time period, our youth, when you got, I came from a small town. Once you got out of that small town, that reputation didn't follow you.
Right.
Now you have that possibility that your reputation is going to follow you no matter what.
You know, when
you have the internet as such, has such a far reach.
You know, it's funny. I've been doing podcasts since 2006, since, you know, the advent of Blog Talk Radio. And before that, I had a blog for 2 years from the day after Election Day 2004 between Bush and Kerry till, you know, I started podcasting, which was 2 years later in 2006. And I went for an interview in 2011. I went for a job interview and I got the job. And it was a huge step up from what I had been doing. And within a few days of me having that job, I'm told I got to get on this conference call. And I get on the conference call early, and another guy jumps on, and he was like, "Is this Mark Ratledge?" I'm like, "It is Mark Ratledge. Says so, right there." He's like, "This is Mark Ratledge," and he was like, "Are you the Mark Ratledge?" I'm like, "I am Mark Ratledge. There probably aren't that many Ratledges in the world, at least not outside of Croatia." But, you know, I guess. He was like, "No, I mean the guy with the podcast." It was 2010, Jason.
Yeah.
And he Googled me. Just straight Googled. And came and found my podcast, found my blog, found all my stuff for 411. And he was like, "Is that you? You did all that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." And, Jason, you've been doing this with me for a long... You've heard, you know, the Ratledge and Broadcasting stuff going all the way back to 2013, 2014. I have said some shit on this network.
Yes. <You know? laughs> we both have.
Yeah. And so I can totally see where, like, yeah, your reputation follows you, you know, your online footprint follows you everywhere now. And it's one of those things it's a little hard to navigate. So far, I haven't like had any negativity come out of that. But, you know, my kids, you know, they're on podcasts with me now. You know, I put them all over, you know, my Facebook and Instagram and everything. And my wife kind of mentioned this. She was like, the one thing I think about with you putting the kids on podcasts, whatever, is what if they grow up to be adults and somebody, you know, and somebody finds that stuff when they're interviewing for a job and they don't get the job because they... But your 10-year-old daughter sound like an idiot reviewing In the Heights. Well, I would hope that, you know, when she's 20, that's not going to be a problem. But, you know, it is a legitimate concern that your online footprint can affect your success in life.
And
go ahead.
The caveat off that really fast is where you see this affect people the most is athletics. Because there was a kid who was the number one draft pick. I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago, a girl came out, made a false allegation because he broke up with her.
Mm-hmm.
He went to jail.
Are you shitting me?
And come to find out, it was all fabricated.
Mm-hmm.
He is now homeless, like homeless, penniless, everything, all because of this. Because when he was in college, this happened, and the people that were at the scouting combine found out about it, and they blackballed him.
That's awful. I really want to talk about, you know, the dinner scene now and the fake vomit, but it's like, what a really awkward transition that is.
Yeah, so this is how you make vomit. They went into word vomit, you know, that you would avoid with if you use Grammarly.com, as we mentioned earlier. Actual vomit, though, is actually, you know, put together, and they go through a long, drawn-out scene how they do it, which is really uneasy for me and made me really uncomfortable. And go.
So, here's the thing. Thank you. Great. All right, so this is the only thing I want to talk about, and then we'll move on to Porky's 3 and then get out of here. The Porky's 3 discussion, not going to be long. Yes. So Wendy, who is played by pull up her name real quick, she's great in these things. It's a shame he didn't go on to do much of anything else. Kiki Hunter, she's fucking fantastic in this scene. You know, she, it's just like, hey, be a complete drunken, stupid asshole. And she does. And she does it, you know, with aplomb. It's one of the funniest scenes in the entire movie, which it didn't get a whole lot of laughs from me, the, you know, the rest of it. But this one was exceptionally funny. And the thing that I want to draw attention to is her whole thing is like, and they made it, like I said, they did an entire scene where her plan to get Gebhardt back, her revenge plan on him, among other things, is she's going to vomit in public with him around, possibly on him. And they and they go into such great detail about this that there's an entire scene of her making the vomit, like you said before. But here's the thing about that, right? So we finally get to the we finally get to the dinner scene, and she's acting crazy and she's yelling all kinds of stuff. And then we and then it all builds to like the, you know, the denouement of that scene. Finally, she's gonna puke. She's gonna puke. She's gonna puke. Right.
All right. Calm down, Vince.
And everybody in that place reacting to her, because it's like the Stand By Me thing where they see a person puke, then they puke. And then, you know, the person sees that and they puke and then the whole room is puking. Right. That's the lard ass story from Stand By Me. She does.
Way to tie my reference in. Tie it all together in a nice bow, Mark. Good job. I'm proud of you.
15 years of podcast, baby. So long story short, too late. She doesn't vomit from her mouth, though. Like, there's it's not even close. She's literally doing like, you know, and I'm a big, you know, big fat guy. So I can do this really, really well. Like, one thing I can do is an imitation of a woman squeezing her boob into a fountain. She's like this here. Okay. She's like, what, you know, and you see pea soup coming out of her boob hole.
Her boob hole? That would be possibly her nipple.
It's like a tube, man. It's a tube. Yeah. It's not even like a nipple. It's like she built like a faucet, but a nozzle.
It's basically an udder. She's basically milking her breasts like a cow.
But it's not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be vomit. Vomit comes from ya, not mya.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, things happen that there's no explanation for.
I laughed. Like tears were coming out of my eyes in that because it was so stupid. And I'm wondering like how, when they were filming that, they were like, well, we want to get her to do, you know, throw up. We can't CGI this. This is 1980, whatever it was, you know, it's special effects, not good in the 80s. Like, I just want to know what was going on in that scene. Like, we insist that she vomit in the fountain, but we can't have any of this crap coming out of her mouth. So we'll have her just do yah instead. And it's like, I'm watching, it's like, how did this make the final cut of the movie? How did they leave that in? I guess because they didn't have anything else to replace it with. But, like, it's the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
It's like look, we have a budget. We can only film this once. We just got to roll with it. Gorilla style, let's go.
However this looks, let's just do it. You know, I was thinking about, I don't know if you ever saw the actual Dolomite, or the movie about Dolomite with, I think it was Eddie Murphy, Dolomite Is My Name, where they talked about, there's a sex scene in Dolomite, a very famous sex scene where they shake the bed so hard, like everything starts to fall apart, and they, you know, and like the counter falls down, and the boom mic falls down, and they just left it in the movie.
I've never seen that nor heard about it.
Go watch Dolomite and then go watch Eddie Murphy's Dolomite Is My Name on Netflix. Highly recommend it. All right. So before we continue, let's get this last plug in and then we'll briefly talk about Porky's and then we'll get out of here. So Jason, what are you listening to these days? What kind of music?
I listen to Christian rock. Death metal.
You know, if you're serious about that, there's a new Styx album coming out.
Mark, am I ever serious? But I find that we can find all of our favorite music on AmazonMusic.com.
That is very true. It's getamazonmusic.com/WTM network. That's getamazonmusic.com/WTM network to get a free 30 days of Amazon Music streaming. You have access to all the music that's digital on Amazon Music. You can stream it as much as you want. If you like the service, you stay with it. If you don't, then you just cancel the service. No fuss, no muss, no problems. If you're already using Amazon Prime like we do in my house, other than just to get out of the house, I don't remember the last time I actually went to a store to shop for anything. I do all, you know, grocery shopping from Amazon Market. I do, you know, my non-food stuff from regular Amazon Prime. Watch movies on Amazon Video. You know, and now I have music on AmazonMusic.com. You should too. It's a great service. So click the link. It helps us out. Keeps the gears moving on this podcast. Get AmazonMusic.com/W2M network to get your free 30 days of Amazon Music. All righty.
You cannot be bought, but you can be rented.
All right. So let's go ahead and talk about Porky's revenge.
Do we have
Yeah, I'm sorry. All right. So Porky's Revenge, which 1985 sex comedy, the third and final film of the original Porky's film series, directed by James Carroll Mack, stars most of the original cast. It had a budget of $7.8 million. It made $20 million, and they decided they were done with this. It's got a 27% from 11 critics on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, needless to say, people didn't love it. So here's the story. During the semifinal basketball game, the cheerleaders promise the team an orgy, like you do, if they win. And so the boys do. After the game, they are led to one of the girls' homes, and everyone strips down to their underwear and jumps into the swimming pool. In it, the girls throw their underwear out. The boys do likewise and swim towards the girls. Soon, but too late, they realize the girls are clothed after all and wind up parading nude before the clothed girls and their parents. Porky now owns a riverboat with a casino and strip club. According to Brian, he is extorting money from the coach Goodenough because he has a gambling debt. The gang decide to go to the boat to take pictures of the illegal casino to give to the DA. During this time, Meat runs into Porky's sixth-grade daughter, Blossom, who forces herself on him. Yes, these things are laden with sexual assault.
That's true.
The boys' plan fails because Porky catches them in the act and is about to kill them. But when they mention the state championship game, he realizes they could help him out by throwing the game so he can bet against them. Later at school, Meat is unable to dissect a frog in science class. Fearing he could become academically ineligible to play in the championship game, the gang goes to Miss Webster's apartment to get a copy of the final exam. They discover her and Mr. Dobish, the school's guidance counselor, having rather kinky extramarital relations. A letter is written to Mrs. Ballbricker arranging a rendezvous at a hotel with an old boyfriend of hers, while Pee-wee is enticed to the same room by the promise of a night of passion with a beautiful Swedish exchange student. Tommy tricks Pee-wee into going to another location where he heads to the room. Miss Ballbricker arrives first, followed by Tommy, and they are horrified to find themselves unclothed and in bed with each other. To make up for their prank on Miss Ballbricker, the gang contacts her old boyfriend and actually gets them together. Aww. During the final game, Meat is benched because Miss Webster intentionally failed him. She discovers the blackmail photos and a note, causing her to change her mind. The second half resulted in a victory for Angel Beach, while Porky is outraged. Blossom tells him that Meat is her boyfriend and they went all the way, infuriating him even more. He then suggests to his two subordinates that Meat and Blossom be married. During the senior prom, Meat is abducted by Porky and his men. The gang goes after them. Just as the wedding is about to start, the power goes out, and Meat is liberated by Billy and Brian. They begin their escape in a motorboat with Porky's boat chasing them closely. The chase ends after they make it through a drawbridge, with Pee-wee then lowering it, resulting in the destruction of Porky's boat. At graduation, the guys trick Pee-wee into taking off all his clothes, except the graduation gown. As he's about to get his diploma, Principal Carter steps on the gown, causing it to come off and reveal Pee-wee in his nudity, just as he dreamed at the beginning of the film. Oh my God. this fucking movie.
All I was going to say is, I think I found our next movie we're reviewing. Space Raiders.
No, we have to do Dummy on formerly of Quibi and now on Roku.
We need shows. We need content for the future.
Yeah, so that's the problem.
You don't have enough content, Mark. Your schedule's empty and barren.
Sure.
Yeah, this movie was
awful.
It totally tarnishes the original. I feel this movie did not have to be made. This movie is the epitome of cash grab. Yeah. Trying to it had no real thing. The jokes were not as crisp and funny.
Honestly, best part of this movie is them sneaking off into like the AV room to watch the stag film, which I thought it was very quaint that they had a stag film on an actual reel. Like, yeah. At some point, like, my kids mostly stayed out of the room while we were watching these, but they walked in at one point and they saw the scene with him with the reel in his hand, and I had to explain to them that that's what movies used to look like. And he, you know, they're like weird, but yeah, it was like really funny to see like a stag film on an actual reel like that. And as a film guy, you know, especially as like an appreciator of film history, I'm like, huh, it's a real reel.
I used to be a projectionist in a movie theater. I used to put movies together off reels like that and put them on one big what is called a platter that ran through an actual projector. So it was kind of appreciation. It kind of was nostalgic for me.
So long story short with this, and just so we can get through it, my favorite part of this entire movie, and then after that, it's kind of, who cares, was them in the principal's office. Because Ballbricker's like monologue that she goes into in the office that ends with "they're retarded," I died laughing. Like, you can't get away with saying that now in a movie. You can't call kid. You can't even use retarded as a word. And you certainly can't use it as an insult. You certainly can't be a teacher calling a student retarded. But, you know, back in 1985, when, you know, when we were free and Nancy Pye and Apple Reagan. Yep, I said it.
Yeah.
You know, you could get away with that thing. And the actress who plays Ballbricker, Nancy Parsons, she's so funny. Like, she has really great line delivery. She's just walking around the desk. And she's like, they're moral. They're degenerates. They're this, they're that. And she takes like a pregnant pause. And she's like, looks over at the principal. They're retarded. It's so good. And then, like, the kid's response to that is it was a health film about anatomy. And she's like indignant. She's like, they had boners. That's when Wendy says, I will not stand here and be accused of having a boner.
Yeah.
The movie doesn't get any better than that. That's the best scene.
I will say the two graduation scenes,
mm-hmm.
the graduation scenes with the exchange student, I would personally say my favorite, but that's a close second.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I really don't have anything else to say about this. I mean, they once again destroy Porky's place. Porky's more villainous here. I think, like, we defended him in the first one, saying, like, they shouldn't have been in his bar in the first place, and they certainly shouldn't have kept going back. And, you know, and, like, the kid was kind of asking for it, and maybe don't halfway kill him would be the only thing I would say against Porky, but... This one, they just outright made him like a big stupid villain. You know, he's going to shotgun marry me to his ugly daughter, and you know he goes into this whole they make him say horrible things. He does horrible things. It's like, this isn't really fun anymore. So, I'll give you my final thoughts on the trilogy, and then I'm going to let you have the final word on revenge and the whole thing at large, and we'll get out of here. I wanted to do this. I absolutely wanted to watch all three and kind of compare and contrast, because it's been, you know, an age since I've seen them. Having seen that now, in retrospect, we probably just should have done it on trial for the first one and ignored the other two. The other two are like direct-to-video quality. This is a classic example in franchise analysis of not really fully understanding why what worked in your first movie worked so well that it became a cultural and financial phenomenon, and then failing to execute those things in your subsequent films. So this definitely falls into the more dinosaurs category of sequel making, where it's like, okay, we made a sexy teen romp comedy, and it was really dope. So we'll just do more of that without really putting any further thought into it. I don't feel like anyone working, I mean, the actors did the best job they could with it, but everyone else, you know, who worked on like the script and the directing and everything, you know, you said it before, without overthinking it, they very much seem like cheap cash grabs. And that's unfortunate. Like, I'd rather Porky's the next day and Porky's Revenge just not existed.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. Because, as you stated, the Long Road to Ruin is usually a gradual progression. This was a steep decline.
Yeah.
This was a very steep decline. Like, the bar was so high with the original that... You know, well, a Wilhelm scream was given on the second and third both, because I mean it just went off a cliff. Like I said, the first one, cultural phenomenon, captured that time capsule of an era of the teen sex comedy of the time. You know, it's one of the top. I'm going to say it's probably one of the top 50 comedies of all time.
I'm gonna let's play a game real quick and then we're done, okay? Unless you have like a tremendous more to say.
No.
Porky's, American Pie, Superbad. Rank them for me.
Oh, now are we going first American Pie?
Yeah, so I'll do the first one. I'm not getting into sequels.
Yeah, hey, that a future episode.
For sure.
I would have to go. Personally, I would go Superbad, Porky's, American Pie.
Okay. Defend.
The reason why I would like Superbad so much is because it just had I guess it's the time I seen it. It just kind of resonates with me more. American Pie, I really wasn't a big fan of. We just watched them, rewatched all of them. And I didn't like him the first time, and I like him even less now. Porky's, like I said, you know, it's that essence of my childhood.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, on top of the doing this and watching these movies to do the show kind of got me out of the funk that I was in because of it took me mentally and emotionally out of the funk, put me in a place where I didn't have to think about what I was watching because I knew this wasn't going to be a real in-depth conversation. And just kind of let me recenter myself. And like I said, it restored a part of my childhood and of happier times. So yeah, that's the way I would go. What about you?
Number one is Porky's for a lot of the same reasons that you said. I think, and it might be artificially elevating the movie, but it comes from a place of my childhood, which is a weird thing to say about a teen sex, you know, comedy where you see, you know, full frontal nudity. But what can I say?
You see more but, bush than the Outback.
Yeah, I would say Porky's is number one. American Pie is firmly in the middle. Like, I like the very first American Pie. After that, it kind of goes off a cliff, and I'd have to... I definitely think, you know, I have to kind of look and see what's been released and what hasn't in terms of, like, what was theatrical and what was direct-to-video, because I don't want to deal... Same thing with, like, Legally Blonde. Like, there are two Legally Blonde movies and a third direct-to-video one, and I'm like, no, I'm not talking about the direct-to-video shit.
Actually, the direct-to-video is no... is not canon.
Okay.
From my understanding, there's actually a Legally Blonde 3 coming out.
I know it's on the list.
The reason why I know this is because my daughter discovered Legally Blonde and I had to recently sit through both of them with her because she wanted to have a movie night with me and wanted to watch both of the movies. And they are not as bad as I thought
were. I can't wait to I can't wait to do Long Road to Ruin for Legally Blonde next year when the third proper one comes out.
Yeah, so yeah, Legally Blonde was not horrible. I mean, I didn't like it when I when she told me that she wanted to, I was like, oh, okay. But then watching it, it was like, you know, this isn't half bad. I guess I thought this was a lot worse than what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, and knowing that my daughter now has pretty much a lot of my similar personality and like sense of humor, I don't know if I should take it as a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah. So, cause I do make dead mom jokes a lot to deal with stuff. So, yeah.
So, yes. So Porky's number one, American Pie firmly in number two, and then Superbad number three, you know, in the ranking, which again, just might be more about my age and my reverence of films closer to my time growing up than not. I think it would be a kind of a fun thought experiment to sit and watch all three like in a row and just, you know, and kind of critically analyze them. But that's a whole other show. Speaking of whole other shows, that's it. That's our Long Road to Ruin for Porky's. Just a real quick set of plugs to the, you know, people who've been watching the video. Thank you for doing that. Today we dropped our re-airing of Inside Out because Luca appears on Disney Plus, so that's in the archive. Pat and I recorded a Dark Side of the Ring, a TV party for Dark Side of the Ring season 3 part 1. We also briefly mentioned the China Vice Versa on that show, so check that out. Alexis Haina and my daughter and I reviewed In the Heights. Myself and Harry Broadhurst did just a strictly audio review of NXT TakeOver In Your House and Against All Odds on the same show. Jesse dropped the new Unspoken Issues, the very first video podcast we've ever done on this network. Jesse Starcher and I, and really, I'm kind of glad that it was me and Jesse because, like, you know, other than Robert, we decided to call ourselves the three wise men of the Rattlington Broadcasting Network. So I was glad that it was me and Jesse that got to do the very first one of these. We did it on trial for Back to the Future 2, because way back in the day when he heard our Back to the Future Long Road to Ruin that Robert and I did, he got pissed off at me for not liking Back to the Future 2. So that's in the archives. Our on trial video is in the archives along with the audio, if you're just listening to this on podcast. Apparently there's a Schumacher cut, a director's cut of Batman Forever. So release the Schumacher cut was trending on Twitter, which means we went into the archives and quick threw up our old Long Road to Ruin for Batman the Schumacher year. So that's in the archives for you to listen to. And then Metal Hammer of Doom, we reviewed Green Jelly Garbage Band Kids. That's in the archives. That's up now for you to listen to. Tomorrow, June 19th, we'll have another archive show. Our Pantera retrospective from the very, very, very early years, like year one of the Metal Hammer of Doom, before it was called the Metal Hammer of Doom, as a matter of fact. And then because Luca is on Disney Plus once again, Robert threw up an old Everyone Loves a Bad Guy on Pixar villains. This coming week, Ronnie Adams and I will review Sweet Tooth Volume 1 Out of the Woods, Out of the Deep Woods, which is what the show is based on. More on that in a moment. Myself, my kids, Robert Winfrey, and Alexis Haina will review Luca on DMU Hollywood. The Four Kings of Boxing returns. We're on Chapter 2 now. We're going to discuss Marvelous Marvin Hagler. We'll review WWE Hell in the Cell. Metal Hammer of Doom, which is staying strictly audio. We're not doing a visual version of that. It's just too legally difficult and just too hard to do. So that's going to be the only show that stays strictly audio. We'll have a review of Fear Factory, the new Fear Factory album that actually dropped today, Aggression Continuum. And then Ronnie Adams and I will be doing a review of the Netflix show based on the comic that we had reviewed earlier in the week, Sweet Tooth, Season 1. All right, Jason, go ahead and do your plugs and let's take me home, baby doll.
Yeah, my plugs are not half as long as that.
My plugs are significantly shorter than they used to be. They used to take up a full 20 minutes.
Well, that was a good 15. but anyway, me, Eric, and Kennedy got together and kicked off Black Irish again. Like I said, on a hiatus due to my mental stability. And we started out discussing black and white privilege, and it dovetailed into a whole other rabbit hole discussion that I really think I'm really proud of that, you know, we could tackle. And honestly, I didn't even use Mark's thing that he teases me about. I'm about to piss somebody off.
Oh, you didn't? I would have lost the drinking game then. Did you talk about slippery slopes?
No, I did not even say slippery slope.
My God, that's not even a Black Irish show then.
I know. I mean, the Black Irish bingo game was out the window quickly after you pointed it out. But
called Harry, notes. Notes.
Harry, Eric, and Kennedy did last week a news desk on the kickoff, which will be returning in full force starting August. Our next Black Irish episode is slated to cover the American educational system. That should be real fun.
Chat my wife. Send my wife an invite to that show. I will convince her to do it.
She's more. If she wants to hop on, I'll be more than happy. You know, because me and Melissa. Say,
aren't you friends with her on chat?
No, I'm not. I don't think I am friends with Melissa. You know, because we are the. Technically, me and Melissa are the MVPs of the RIB. That will never rest. Just so you know. So you know. Actually, it was more Melissa than me because I was just there.
It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that we were reviewing Baby Metal at the time.
Hey, no, it was because you had me and Melissa on the same show. That's why it was so popular. So shout out to Melissa on that one. We're gonna review the American educational system and how it's pretty much failing everyone. We're going to get into critical race theory in that discussion. It's going to be an interesting thing. And we're setting Kennedy up for her to take the lead because if anybody actually listens to that and has ever came across Kennedy's TikTok, she is a very strong proponent for men's rights and basically battles fem-Nazis on a daily basis. And we're going to tackle the whole feminism attack on men. And we're going to let Kennedy have a real good platform. And me and Eric's just going to kind of chime in. We're just going to let her run with it and say a lot of things that keep getting her kicked off TikTok. Outside of that, I mean, that's pretty much everything I've got.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us here on the Rattle Legend Broadcasting Network's Long Road to Ruin for Porky's Trilogy for Jason Teasley. I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.